welcome to the Hoop Collective podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we are doing early on Wednesday morning. Joining us from New York City, where he went to another classic in this 76ers-Knicks series, Game 5, which we thought was going to be the end of the series, but no, said Tyrese Maxey with an incredible finish. It's Tim Bontemps.
I texted our boss, Christina Douglas, after the game and said, I don't know if I've ever had more fun than I have over the first five games of this series. This has been unbelievable stuff. It'll be fun to chat about it.
Yes, and joining us from out here in Los Angeles, we're so happy to have one of our favorite people at ESPN NBA's staff. It's Ramona Shelburne. What's up,
hey.
Momo?
What's going on, Bri?
Yeah, what a thing to watch with this 76ers game. Okay, Joel Embiid had a triple-double in this game. He almost had the bad quadruple-double.
Oh,
he had nine turnovers. Joel threw some passes in this game where I was wondering how his vision was, because he threw some passes that were wild. The Sixers went 6 minutes without making a basket, 5-6 minutes without making a basket in the fourth quarter, had a bunch
also
of...
Also went 6 minutes in the second quarter where they went up an 18-2 run.
Oh, it was like, oh my God, how can they win this game? The Knicks looked like they had it. And Bontemps, I said after game three that you could have written a short book about this series. Well, we're now into a serial, because this has been wild. And with Jalen Brunson, with the games down in Philly, now this one. So take us into the garden tonight and take us into the locker room after about how that all went down.
I mean, I think there's only one thing really to say, which is that I had a conversation with Joel Embiid after the game. And for a long time, there's been a lot of speculation about what's Joel Embiid's future going to look like? And where is Joel Embiid going to play? And is he going to be in Philadelphia? And what are the Sixers going to look like? All that stuff's over. Tyrese Maxey is a full-blown, full-blooded superstar.
Mm-hmm.
His performance today was the stuff of, frankly, legends. This is a legendary performance.
We just had a legendary performance from Jalen Brunson.
I know.
Yeah.
Two days ago.
This series has been... I covered the 2016 playoffs all the way through. Spurs Thunder, which was Tim Duncan's last playoff series, which was an incredible six-game series. Then all of Warriors Thunder, which was an incredible seven-game series.
Clay.
The Clay Thompson game. Oh. And obviously then Warriors Cavs, which was also a legendary
game six,
series
Clay.
On many levels. And this series stacks up with all of that for everything that's gone into it. You have two massive, iconic franchises. You have Jalen Brunson establishing himself as a superstar with Tom Thibodeau, the guy who's known him since he was a baby, with the Knicks, who have not been in the conference finals in 24 years, have not won playoff series in back-to-back years in 24 years, have not clinched a playoff series on their home court since game six of the Eastern Conference semifinals against longtime Knick killer Reggie Miller 25 years ago.
God.
Had a chance to do that today. And game two are down five with 27 seconds to go, come back and win the game. Only the fourth time in the last 25 years that's happened. 10 days later, the exact inverse situation. The Sixers do the same thing. It's now happened five times in 25 years and twice in 10 days in the same series in the same building. And it's all because of Tyrese Maxey, who is a joy to be around at all times, has been through 10,000 things in Philadelphia. He's only a Sixer because Mike Muscala hit a three in the bubble to win a meaningless game and gave the Sixers the draft pick that became Tyrese Maxey. 2 years ago, Ben Simmons asked for a trade. Tyrese Maxey is given the ball by Doc Rivers and said, you're going to be our point guard. He's the point guard for half a season. Then James Harden comes in this summer. James Harden's status is up in the air. It's time to give the ball back to Tyrese Maxey. And Joel Embiid, from day one, has always said, this guy is going to be a star. He has talked about him for years now. And talking to him after the game and hearing Joel talk about Tyrese and the way he's matured and the way he's grown into this player. Because look, Joel had a terrible game. In the fourth quarter, Nick Nurse rode Joel Embiid into the start of the fourth quarter again. He absolutely ran out of gas. He started making horrible decisions. He was flinging the ball all over the place. Nick actually pulled him out of the game for a couple minutes in the fourth quarter to give him a break. And it looked like this thing was going to end in defeat.
In all honesty, it didn't look like he trusted himself with the ball. There were times where he could have taken shots and he didn't. One time he drove the lane. He was going up against Josh Hart and he was just like, I don't want to shoot it.
He was seven for 19 from the field and he had nine turnovers. He also had the first ever triple-double he's had in a playoff game, right? I mean, it sort of sums up the
chaotic
nature
of this series.
Well,
he played 48 minutes, so part of that was just getting totals, but yeah.
Yes, but he also did make some really good passes in the first half and then completely lost his mind throwing the ball off the place in the fourth quarter. It looked like things were over.
He just looks really tired to me. Like, Tim, I've covered him his whole career, and I've seen, like, he's looked heavy to me since he came back, and which is obvious, right? He's not able to do anything like that with a knee injury. And so you get heavy and you have to play your way back into shape. He had seven games to play his way back into shape. I think he's getting there, but like when you watch him, especially, and you've written about this too, like when Nick has to play him the whole fourth quarter, this isn't LeBron playing the whole fourth quarter, AD, who've been healthy and have played a lot of minutes. This is a guy who just barely came back from a knee surgery, who's still finding his wind, who's still finding his, you know what he looked like to me? He looked like a boxer at the end of a fight who's just like kind of holding on, like a little staggered. Like, I agree with you, Brian. I don't know if he's seeing really well. He had a migraine today at shoot around. He looks like he's just barely standing up by the end of the game.
He summoned it down the stretch and made three massive defensive plays in the final 90 seconds.
Ended up laying on the ground for the possession that secured the game.
Dove on the ground to get the ball. But look, he just played badly in the fourth quarter. He got tired. He started making lazy mistakes. He played really badly. But you know what? In the past, there's never been a guy to save the day. And now they have as good a 1-2 punch as you can find in the NBA. Tyrese Maxey is a full-blooded superstar. And that performance he had tonight, like, that was the Reggie Miller 8 points in 9 seconds moment. Like, that
like
was...
Like, they were showing it. Points. You were watching it in the... It in the Garden, okay? Yes. We were all watching it on TV. I'm jealous of you. I think that would have been an amazing scene. However, it's, like, not as fun when the Knicks lose that. But they were showing the scenes of all the Knicks old-timers there. Like, everyone was... Patrick Ewing is there, and Spike, and every... Like, the Garden was ready to just absolutely
erupt.
There
was an amazing moment. I haven't seen this get memed, but like after Tyrese hit the second three, which we'll talk about in a second, John Stewart is there with this shell-shocked look on his face. Like, somebody get that look. John Stewart looks like he was just told that, you know,
the only thing better would have been Marv Albert the election on the call, right? Like, Marv Albert on the call here. Like, that's all this game needed.
Marv Albert, our guy who was on the call for MSG Network, Mike Breen, was doing the game.
It was an amazing game to watch. I mean, I don't even know where we even started.
Is this true? Jackson just put in the chat. By the way, Jackson was at MSG tonight. Jackson said Tracy Morgan gave Maxey the finger.
I didn't see that. But what I did see was Maxey, who was like, Tyrese is always a very happy, joyful guy. Yeah. And when Nick Batum, who made a great play to block Jalen Brunson on the drive at the buzzer, because Tibbs, I think, did a smart thing and didn't call timeout because it was chaotic and trusted Jalen to get a shot.
Yep.
Maxey let out this just crazy roar and is pumping his fists and is running down the court, and it just pans over. And as it pans over, you just see John Stewart standing there like this, staring off into space, like the Matt Ishbia look, just going like, what did I just see? And I mean, look, the fact that this just happened 10 days ago in the exact same fashion, in the exact same building, in the polar opposite way. I mean, this series has been unbelievable. And the underpinning of all of it is both of these teams see what's going on the other side. And they see a debacle of a Pacers team that can't close out the Bucks. And who knows, you know, Doc Rivers says after the game that Giannis and Dame are close to returning. We'll see how true that is. But whoever wins this series is going to be favored to make the conference finals. And neither one of these teams has done that since 2001.
Yeah.
And everybody's aware of it on both sides. So
I'm sorry. I'm just laughing. Jackson just sent me the photo of Tracy Morgan.
Oh, wow.
So first off, Ben Stiller is there.
Okay.
Looking like someone just, you know, stole his dog.
Yeah.
And Tracy Morgan, this is not in jest. Tracy Morgan is legit pissed off.
Awesome.
But so let's talk about those two plays real quick.
Yeah.
This game's cooked. I don't want to know the game. Don't tell me the BPI win probability.
And by the way, just because I was there, just to fill in. So Deuce McBride hits his jumper with 28.9 seconds to go.
By the way, real quick, Jalen Brunson executes that play perfectly. He backs outward to force the space. Deuce McBride comes right in. He gets a wide open 15 footer. It's a brilliant execution play. Tibbs turns and
the Sixers had some really bad execution. They kept trying to double Jalen in the fourth quarter, and they did it really poorly, and they kept giving up easy shots. But Deuce McBride hits the shot I'm not kidding. The press box was shaking for the entire 3-minute timeout. Everybody in the building was jumping around. The game was over. The series was over. They hadn't closed the series out here in 25 years. Everybody's going absolutely berserk. And then they come out of the timeout. They run this play for Tyrese. And Mitchell Robinson, for some reason, runs over to contest it, jumps up in the air, gets called for a foul. Tyrese makes this shot.
The 4-point play.
Sets up everything else.
Also, I mean, remember, it was initially ruled a two. And
which
you look
was
at it,
ridiculous.
It was not even close to a two. Yeah, but so the fact insane. That he had that hang time to, like, I think he double clutch while he's in the air and then throws up this prayer of a shot. I was like, oh my God.
I loved watching the replay in slow motion. He kind of posed watching it because he must have felt like it was going in.
Yeah.
He was kind of like, I got him. And he was just watching it go in. And look, Mitchell Robinson after the game was like, I'm going to be a man about this. I bleeped up. So then, okay, they go down and they go to the free throws. And I'm telling you, when there's a comeback, there's always a missed free throw.
Always.
I'm telling you. Like
Kawhi Leonard.
What was the comeback we just saw recently?
Kyle Lowry.
Josh Hart misses a free throw. I mean, there's always a missed free throw.
And by the way, the second free throw hit the rim 70 times.
I know. Yes. It barely dropped in. So I'm thinking, okay, they're going to foul.
Yep.
Right. We just 15 seconds left. Sixers have no timeouts, have to bring the ball up, and Tyrese Maxey gets over half court, takes one step, and just pulls from 35 feet and buries it. Just an absolutely epic shot.
I mean, I felt like that was Reggie Miller redo. That was, I couldn't, and I've covered a lot of these too, Timmy, with the Sixers, and it always is heartache. There's always this Joel looking around forlorn, like, oh, is this my lot in life? Like, I never have a teammate I can rely on. I mean, last year, James Harden hit a pretty big three in one of those Sixers games, in one of those Celtics games. But then, of course, we know game 6 and 7. I don't think he's ever had a teammate rescue him and his team the way Tyrese Maxey did today.
Almost nobody has. No question. Okay. And
Stat Williams, our pal, gave me this. Tyrese has 46 tonight. Joel had 50 in game 3. It's the first time in NBA playoff history two teammates have had at least 45 points in a game in the same series.
Okay, so let me just say this. Jalen Brunson goes for 40 in this game. Hello, another gigantic game for Jalen Brunson.
The only guy to score in overtime for the Knicks at all nine of their points.
So he makes two baskets going into the fourth quarter. And so it's like, okay, the Knicks have picked themselves up off the canvas.
Start overtime, you mean?
I'm sorry, starting overtime. Yeah. They've picked themselves off the canvas. Now they're still going to do it. Okay. And the Sixers still do not break. And then a huge play in this game, Jalen Brunson goes to pull for a three and a textbook brilliant closeout by Nico Batum. This is what they've put the size on him. He has defeated the size mostly for the last three games. He gets up in the air and he doesn't have a window to shoot.
Yep.
And he panics.
Throws out of bounds.
Isaiah Hartenstein is headed for the rim to get an offensive rebound because that's what the Knicks do.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, the ball's coming at him, and he's like, "What? What?
Oh,
huge moment! Huge moment in this game that Nico Batum makes that closeout that forces that turnover as well."
I mean, like Brian, you say like whenever there's a big comeback, there's always a missed free throw, right? There's also a turnover, and both teams had some unbelievable turnovers in this game where you're like, that is a soul crushing. The one where Mitchell Robinson pokes the ball from Embiid when he's trying to post up.
Yeah.
I think there was a Maxey turnover that I was like, oh my God. Right. Like all of these turnovers could have been soul crushing. And yet it was just the last one. It was just the Jalen Brunson miscommunication with Hartenstein. You're right. Hartenstein is going to crash and Brunson's like, what happened? But I think we should also go back to the play where Joel had made it's three incredible defensive plays in a row. And then he has this one play where he just, I think it was the, I don't know if you call him tired, if he just didn't quite swing right, if his eyes off, he's not seeing, he just clobbers Brunson in the face. And it's Joel Embiid went from the Knicks fans trying to recruit him to be their next star to like public enemy number one. Like with the play on Mitchell, Mitchell Robinson and the ankle, right? And then this one on Brunson. Like, I don't know if we can even go there in the offseason now.
Listen, I got to say something. We got to get rid of Secaucus. I'm with LeBron. We got to get rid of the replay center. This replay center is insane. Like, you could debate this call with Embiid. I mean, look, with what happened in game three, he probably deserves two flagrants in the series. So whatever. I'm glad it didn't decide the game.
Yeah.
The fact that they went to the replay in the first quarter when Mitchell Robinson picked up Kelly Oubre and body slammed him like he was in a WWE ring.
Yeah, he did.
And they said, oh, this is a common foul. No big deal here. Like, we have the play in the Lakers series with D'Angelo Russell and Michael Porter Jr. Mike Porter Jr. whacks him in the head.
Yeah.
And we're told, oh, it's marginal contact.
Marginal.
To the head.
What, this marginal contact that? Line.
I know.
Get rid of it. Get rid of it.
Listen, yeah. We need to get rid of all these replays. All of it. I'm tired of all of this crap. It's not helping anything. It extends
also,
the games out. It's just
the
it's
whole
miserable.
Thing where you don't get to, you know, where Darvin Ham lost the timeout. We'll talk about that later.
Yes.
Like, that's not. First off, that was also a weird overturn, but I don't have time for that right now.
No.
Marginal nonsense. But like, sometimes you get your timeout back, sometimes you don't. I don't like it.
It's all nonsense.
Like it. By the way,
get rid of it.
By the way, they did get the flagrant. Jalen missed one of the free throws.
Exactly.
Yes, he did.
I mean,
I know.
Always a missed free throw.
And then he hit a three to tie the game.
Right afterwards.
It ends up being a 4-point play because they were down four with a minute to go. And you're thinking, oh, here we go. They're going to blow it again. And then it get a Kelly Oubre bucket, and
great
that's
play
when the turnover happened.
To get that Oubre bucket, by the way.
Yes, and then that's when the turnover happened, and then they end up winning. But by the way, you mentioned Batum earlier. The other thing this team doesn't has that the previous teams didn't. I know Kyle Lowry wasn't on the court late in the game. They have Kyle Lowry, and they have Nico Batum. Two super smart, veteran, high IQ guys that are just rock solid and make winning plays.
Yep.
And Nico Batum had a huge block in the Miami game. These guys have made huge plays throughout this series, and this Sixer team is just, whether they win the series or not, between the introduction of Maxey as a full-blown star and some of these glue guys that they now have there, they've got a lot more stuff to them than they had in the past. They've got Nick Nurse dialing stuff up. They got a ton of cap space this summer. They're for once, finally, I think, if you're a Sixer fan, no matter what happens over the next few days, there's real reason for optimism about where this team is going. And like I said, all this talk about, well, maybe Joel should look here. Maybe Joel should look there. There's nowhere to go. Like, this is, he's got his running mate, and the Sixers are going to be right in the mix for a long time because this kid is unbelievable.
Let's see how it ends for the Clippers and Paul George in the next few days.
Sixers are
going to
have
about
some options this
Listen,
summer.
There's two teams. There's two teams right now that are paying very close attention to Paul George, the Orlando Magic and the Philadelphia 76ers, because both of them have the money to throw at him and have a need for a wing just like him, a veteran guy. Every time I watch the Sixers, I'm like, ooh, they could use Paul George. Ooh, fit right there. Paul George from Los Angeles. I know the Clippers are going to make an effort to keep him, but as we
it's
know,
it's just really
it hasn't
a matter of whether the
yet.
Clippers are going to give him the max, which is something that they don't want to do because they didn't give it to Kawhi.
Correct.
And
you know, also if you're Paul George, which we haven't gotten to that series, I don't know how much we're going to spend on it, but tonight, but Kawhi Leonard had one of his best seasons in a long time. He played a lot of games this year. He was very available. And then yet again, gets hurt right at the critical time. And that knee it's just seen a lot of damage. It's just had a lot of miles on it. And if you're Paul and you're thinking about, do I want to re-up here in LA for less than the max? It's obviously a hometown discount. He hasn't done it yet, but how much faith do you put in that aging roster? How much do you want to stay in your hometown?
You're watching Tyrese Maxey. Okay. Bontemps, before we move on, I have no idea what we're going to get in game six here. Game six.
I mean, it'd be very Sixers-y.
In Philly have been a bugaboo. Yeah.
Yes, they have. It would be very Sixers-y for the Sixers to win this game and go home and lose game six. I will just say the Knicks stole game two. It was the epic ultimate gut punch.
The definition of
it. You think the series maybe it's going to be a sweep. Maybe Philly's going to go home and just capitulate because this was such a devastating loss.
Yeah.
Joel Embiid goes for 50. They bounce back and win the game. I'm just going to tell you, this Knicks team is beyond tough. And they are not going to be wiped out because they lost the game. And they are going to show up on Thursday in Philly. There's going to be several thousand Knicks fans there. There might be more. The place is going to be an absolute madhouse. And the Knicks are going to be live in the fight. And through five games of this series, the Sixers have outscored the Knicks by a grand total of 2 points. All I am confident of is that we're going to get to the fourth quarter on Thursday, and it's going to be a tight game. And we will see who is able to make the plays down the stretch. But this game, every game in this series has been a couple possession game with a minute to go. And one team or the other has made just enough plays in the last minute to win. I expect we're going to see the same thing on Thursday. It will be very interesting to see if Philly can overcome its demons and get it back for a game seven. Because I almost think the Knicks are either going to win game six in Philly or they're going to lose the series. Because I think that the Sixers are almost more comfortable, I think, not being at home with all the drama that goes on.
By the way, let's see how many Sixers season ticket holders have their tickets on StubHub.
I bet there's going to be a lot of Knicks fans at the game on Thursday.
There just are. And here's it. This happens out here in Los Angeles with the Rams. The Rams have a nice fan base, but every time they play the 49ers, every time, half the stadium, if not more, is 49er fans because they have a historic fan base that comes in. And people like the Rams will go on LA radio and say, please don't sell your tickets. Please. I don't care how much money you can get for them. Please don't put them on StubHub.
It's very easy for the Rams to say that when people are getting 6 and 8 times the price of their tickets for these games. By the way, I got zero issue with any fan selling their tickets for a gazillion times more than their
America,
price.
It's America, of course.
That's right.
It's America.
And these tickets are cost a ton of money. And God bless you if you want to
pay for your whole season
ticket
package by just selling your couple of playoff tickets. So I know it's probably not the best time to call out your own home team fans after you lose a game at home, right? You know, I think that was a good story you had there, Timmy. But I don't know how that played in Philly, after a loss. Is that a challenge?
I didn't think Joel said anything that crazy.
No,
I mean, he got asked about it and just said, look, I'm not an issue with our fans, but it kind of sucked that there was all these Knicks fans here, which was true.
All right.
It was like going to a Knicks-Nets game.
The next chapter awaits on Thursday night.
You know what the real loser is, though? It's me, because I believe this game, because of these bozo Pacers, I believe this is going to be a 9 p.m. local tip, which it is, which is a real devastating blow.
So Jackson says it was like $600 to get into Madison Square Garden. So it's actually a little cheaper to go down to Philly. Although I guess you got to pay for a train ticket.
Oh,
right?
It's way cheaper. That's why people are doing it. Because they're like, I had a friend, like I said the other day on the pod, I had a friend who went to game four and it cost him a fraction of what it would cost him to sit in the last seat in the building. And he was sitting 10 rows behind us in the media section.
I just computed that how late we're going to have to do the podcast on Thursday night.
That's why I did this.
All
folks.
Right.
I gave everyone their own sleep update on pod live in the moment.
Oh my God. I don't even want to think about it. All right. Thank you, Bontemps. We'll be right back on the Hoop Collective. Just stay with us.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Two guys drove to work. Neither guy wore a seatbelt. One guy got a ticket. One guy didn't. The same two guys drove home. One guy wore a seatbelt. One guy didn't. One guy made it home. The guy not wearing his seatbelt didn't. Don't risk it. Click it or ticket. Paid for by NHTSA.
Now joined here in Los Angeles, where he's going to be covering the pivotal, potentially iconic Game 5 between the Clippers and Mavericks on Wednesday evening, it's Ben McMahon.
Howdy, partners. I'm at a hipster hotel here in LA, getting the full California vibe. It's good to join you.
Ramona, McMahon and I took in tonight's games at a watering hole here in LA and watched some great finishes. And one of those finishes after the 76ers-Knicks tremendous overtime game was Cavs Magic, which came right down to the end. Another pivotal. This one won't be iconic, although for Evan Mobley fans it was. But another pivotal Game 5 in a 2-2 series. Cavs getting their biggest playoff win tonight. in the post-LeBron era. Really, the biggest playoff win without LeBron since the 90s. That was, you know, how important this game was for them. And they get it by 1 point over the Magic. It was a dogfight down the stretch of this game. The Cavs had a big setback on Tuesday because Jarrett Allen was ruled out Tuesday evening with bruised ribs, which maybe I missed it, but it was not on the injury report. He did suffer it in game four. And Jarrett Allen was really the only Cav coming into this game who had played up to his level. And even he wasn't at his best, but had played up to his level in this series. So it was a big setback, but it kind of made something interesting happen, which was it forced the Cavs to play with only one true big man and forced them to spread the floor a little bit. They put Isaac Okoro into the starting lineup, so they played small. They'd only been shooting about 26% on three-pointers in this series. They were only averaging about six threes a game, and that's not who they are. Mm-hmm. And so they played smaller, and they also played Marcus Morris as a stretch four man, a guy they picked up on 10-day contracts late in the season. Marcus hit threes. Evan Mobley played center and had two dunks in the last few minutes, and then a tremendous jaw-dropping block on Franz Wagner in the final 10 seconds that basically clinched the game. A great defensive play. McMahon, I don't think either of these teams are headed for a very long playoff run, but it's a very, very important series to both of them. This came right down to it, and the guy that the Cavs needed to step up in this game, Evan Mobley, did so, and it was a big moment, the biggest moment of his young career.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And look, he is a center. He is a center. He is a center, right? Long term, that's his future. Long term, that's likely the Cavs' future. Jared Allen has been really, really good in Cleveland. At some point, they need to decide between one or the other, get value for the one that they trade. But those two guys, they've made it work well enough with them. But Brian, you go on Cleveland radio every week, and what do you say? What do you tell them? You're giving them free advice. What do you tell them?
I say 3-1-1. One point guard, which means, you know, not Garland and Mitchell, although they played well enough. One point guard, one big man, three shooters. That's how the Cavs need to play. And they played their best this year when injuries forced them to play 3-1-1. And in this game, injuries forced them, maybe not 3-1-1, but certainly three shooters, a lot more out there with just one big man, not with Mobley and Allen, two, you know, non-shooters. And for the first time all series, they hit 100 points, and they needed every single one of them. And the first time all series, they were able to really unlock their three-point shooting. It wasn't a great three-point shooting night, but it was an adequate one. And playing 3-1-1 or whatever tonight, it opened up the lane for Garland. It opened up the lane for Donovan Mitchell, although he didn't have a great game.
He didn't shoot the three well.
Right. But he got to the basket.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's how the Cavs played. And it seems to take injury to force it that way, because JB mm-hmm. Bickerstaff knows that Mobley and Allen are two good players. He just can't really bring himself to figure out how to play with both of them. It forced them into playing this way, and it led to a victory.
I thought that was one of the most important victories they've had since the finals, since the LeBron era. And not just because of last year's playoff disappointment, but more because of what's at stake this summer. Like, they have some big financial decisions to make about Mobley. They have some, in terms of extensions, right? They have big financial decisions to make on Donovan Mitchell and whether you keep him. But also, I think this group feels like there's a ceiling. Like, are they a first round team? Are they a second round team? If you're going to be this expensive and make these big, keep everyone together and let them grow some more, what's the ceiling? And if they lose this game at home, which it looked like they were going to lose for a little while there.
Oh, yeah. They were pretty much behind the much of the fourth quarter.
Oh, and Paolo Banchero straight up balled in this game.
Yes.
Like, that's what you want to see out of the face of that franchise, that, you know, recent number one overall pick in his first playoff series.
Yeah, and I felt like when you're at home for a game five, there is so much pressure on the home team right there because, you know, the Magic had taken care of their home court. They look really good in those games three and four. If they get that momentum and steal one on your home court.
Yeah, this series would have been over if the Cavs lost this game.
It's hard to come back. And not just this series, but I think this group with the Cavs.
It's possible.
Right? I mean, it's sort of clarifying. You go out twice in the first round, 2 years in a row, especially when they – with as much as they gave up to get Donovan Mitchell, with as much as they're going to have to invest to keep the group together, it's a hard one to swallow 2 years in a row. And I thought that was a real gut check win for them.
Yeah.
So I think the group needs tweaking or significant change regardless. Again, getting back to invest in one center and, you know, get value for the other. As far as the financial decision on Donovan Mitchell, the decision is how much do you beg him to sign the max extension that you're going to put on the table?
A lot. They're going to beg him a lot.
Right. That decision is Donovan's, not the Cavaliers, just to be clear.
Yeah. And, you know, look, he was 9 of 23, I think, in this game.
1 of 7 from 3.
I'm not sure that his knee is – he's proclaimed himself healthy. He doesn't quite look healthy to me. But go ahead.
Well, it's been that kind of year for him. I caught him in Los Angeles a few weeks ago before the end of the regular season. And he was telling me about when he broke his nose and stuff and the mask he was wearing. And so, I don't know if people understand how big a deal that was. Like he literally couldn't breathe. Like when he would fly, it was like he couldn't breathe out of one side of his nose. And when he would fly, he said he was taking Afrin and stuff, just trying to get it to open up. So
it's like Joel. Joel can't. Yeah. He's got one side of his face. Mm-hmm. Donovan had one nostril not working.
One nostril not working. And I think it's still kind of affecting him. I think it's affecting, how can it not? Right. And I think like when you saw their team, even towards the end of the regular season, they were starting to get healthy, but they just didn't have a lot of time for everyone to be back together and round in any kind of form or identity. And then boom, there's the playoffs. And so I think with Donovan, I'm giving him a pass on games like this in terms of shooting, in terms of how he feels and looking healthy, et cetera, because he's out there, right? He's definitely not 100%. And it's an accumulation of injuries that he's had this year, but he's out there at least. And they need just the threat of him because, as you mentioned, Brian, that offense is hurting most of the time in the series. Yeah.
So Darius Garland had also really been struggling. In fact, you know, all of the Cavs have been struggling. Garland came out, and I do think space was a big factor. And Garland had 17 points in the first quarter in this game, a big breakout performance. He didn't do a whole lot offensively the rest of the night. But what happened in this series is they took Jalen Suggs off of Garland and put him on Mitchell. It really bothered Mitchell with how pesky and how much he was fighting over screens, and they were double teaming Donovan. And Garland wasn't taking advantage of the opportunity given to him when they moved Suggs off of him and double teaming Mitchell. And I'm sure he thought about that after two dud games down in Orlando. They had 2 days off, 2.5 days, because they played afternoon on Sunday and or on Saturday. And I think he definitely came out with a head of steam, and he had more space because and it worked. And then at the end of the game, he made several big plays, including the go-ahead bucket. A dump off, a wraparound pass to Mobley for a dunk. Mm-hmm. Also, Max Strus, who'd been awful in this series. I mean, one of the things that the Cavs went out and got him for was to be a difference-making guy in the playoffs and shooting it. He had 3 3-pointers total through the first four games. He comes in, definitely plays his best playoff game so far, had 4 threes tonight. He makes some big-time plays. And the basket before the basket, he makes a drive and dumps off to Evan Mobley for a dunk. And it was just really important. By the way, Mobley makes the block on Franz Wagner. Franz Wagner was talking bleep to the crowd in this game. He was not good in this game. He was only 3 of 11.
But it might have been in German, so I'm not sure they understood it.
Yeah. You know, Mo Wagner is the one who gets the attention for, you know, starting stuff and talking to the crowd. But Franz is indeed his younger brother. But
runs the family.
But Mobley really effectively also guarded Banchero down the stretch. Banchero was 14 to 24 for 39 points, has two 35 plus point games in this series, just 2 of 6 against Mobley in the fourth quarter. That's not totally shutting him down, but certainly slowing him down. And that made a difference. So that series, is headed to game six, and so is the series between the Bucks and the Pacers. So I think a lot of people thought that the Bucks were cooked, even though they were going home for game five. No Giannis, no Dame, no momentum. You know, Pacers playing great, smelling blood, seeing a great opportunity. No team in NBA history had ever won a playoff game when their top two scorers were out with an injury. It doesn't happen that many times.
Wow.
But they were basically facing a real big mountain, and they rallied. They got Chris Middleton, who played really well down in Indy in games three and four. He delivers a 29-point, 12-rebound, 5-assist performance, hits 4 threes. Bobby Portis, who had to live for a few days with, you know, having gotten ejected in just a crushing blow. I mean, I don't think they're winning that game anyway, but Bobby getting ejected in the first quarter, he comes back with a huge game, 29.
Fresh legs, baby.
He did have fresh legs. Malik Beasley, who moved into the starting lineup, hit 4 threes. Patrick Beverley had a very effective game, 13 points, 12 assists. You know, they got the role players to play well at home. He was a pest. He's starting bleep with Obi Toppin. He was messing with Obi, like trying to take the ball from him in a dead ball. Obi just shoved him into the stands, which is what he wants.
Hey, he's starting stuff. He's hitting the two small celebration, 13 points, 12 assists. They can't score on him. Patrick Beverley and Brooke Lopez basically said, hey, that pretty little Pacers offense, no, we're shutting that whole thing down. Pacers were 4 of 19 with those guys as the primary defender, had 6 turnovers, more turnovers than buckets against those two guys as the primary defenders. Shout out Stats Williams and the Stats and Info Group. This was the Pat Bev boost, baby.
It's good for one game, right? I mean, whether it's what, if that's all he gives them in this series or these playoffs, I feel like it's enough. Like that's what they went out to get him for. The whole reason Doc Rivers wanted him on that team is for games like this, is for a moment when you've got your top two guys are out and Pat can just irritate everybody, just stir stuff up and get people uncomfortable. And I think like he's done that in every team. There's a shelf life to it. It doesn't, it's good for, you know, here and there. And after a while it's like, all right, that's enough already. But that's all they needed is just one. And the problem for the Bucks is there's no one's walking but through that door, right? Giannis is not walking through that door. Dame is not walking through that door. Like if they're going to win this series, they're going to have to do it with this group. And Brian, I'm glad Chris Middleton is giving them something. I mean, he doesn't look healthy to me either. He looks like every other play, I feel like something's gone wrong with him. Is he all right? You know, he's got braces everywhere. But he was a champion. He's an Olympian. Yeah. Like that's part of that championship core. I think Brooke Lopez has been really good the last couple of games. I mean, these are the other guys on the team that we don't talk about because Giannis is Giannis and Dame is Dame. But these guys are also champions. I thought that was heartening if you're a Bucks fan to see them at least hold court in this important game.
Yeah, they also have slowed down Pascal Siakam, who was torching them early in the series.
Yeah.
Bobby Portis has played a significant role there. And they outscored the Pacers in transition in this game. They held the Pacers, not because they were playing super fast, but they held the Pacers to 7 points in transition. That's just, you know,
that offense is.
Yeah, the Pacers scored 92 points. They ain't winning, you know, which is what happened here. I think, you know, they kind of let go of the rope down the fourth quarter. But so look, the big question now is, can Giannis get involved in this series? Doc Rivers is given the same update on Giannis for like 7 straight days here. I don't think he was ever close to playing until maybe getting towards this weekend. The update that was given today was that he was out on the court, quote, working up a sweat really for the first time, sort of playing more with teammates. These teams are not doing contact practices during the playoffs. So it's not like you're saying, oh, we're going to throw him into a practice. But Giannis does seem to be making progress. Whether or not he can make enough progress to come back in game six, I don't know. They also are not ruling Dame out, but Dame just had an Achilles injury like a couple of days ago.
All of this scares me with older players. I mean, Dame's an older player. Giannis, he's not older, but he's
He's in the middle of his career. He's not 22 anymore.
Yeah. I mean, we all, I guess I always just splash back to the Kevin Durant calf injury.
Yep. Everybody does. Exactly.
Yeah. And I think you got to have the longest of views here. As much as you want to win the series and you don't want to go out in the first round and you want to get those two guys back, you can't take a chance on those, either of them popping Achilles.
Well, it's the same reason like Kristaps Porzingis, we might not see him in the second round of the playoffs. Yeah. And certainly it makes sense for the Celtics to be extremely cautious with that because, like you said, these things are all connected. And I didn't know what the hell a soleus was until recently, but
yeah, now it's,
I realize now lexicon. It ain't something to mess with.
Well, there's a gastroc and a soleus and an
Achilles.
Uh-oh,
we got the Stanford girl.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, here we go.
Look, I'm not a doctor, but I play one on TV.
What was the GPA at Stanford?
I could tell you. I mean, it was like an A-minus GPA. Something
okay,
like that.
I was going to say, if I can tell she you, it sounds like softball. A 2 point some odd.
I still, it was about 3.6, 3.7, something like that.
Okay.
I was always cruising in there with that A-.
She was acting like she didn't want to tell us because it wasn't good. She's like, yeah, it was 3.6 at Stanford. You
listen,
know.
I was about a 2.3 at North Texas, but I ain't trying to brag.
McMahon would get a 3.6 if you combine the first and second semester.
Absolutely. Had a few of those.
Add them together.
Hey, you know whose numbers aren't looking too pretty right now?
Who's that?
In this game in particular, Tyrese Haliburton.
Ooh.
Yeah.
And listen, obviously this kid is one of the rising stars in the NBA. And in-season tournament was like the Tyrese Haliburton, if you didn't know, now you know, coming out party.
Yeah.
But when you look at, you know, you just look around. And you look at Anthony Edwards, for example, you know, like that's a guy who is taking the playoff stage and grabbing it and saying, you know, I'm going to kill everything in front of me. That is a quote.
Yeah.
This was Tyrese Haliburton's first opportunity to have that playoff kill, that closeout opportunity.
Yeah.
And if we're going to be real honest, Pat Beverly and the Bucks made his life miserable. Now he'll sit on it for a couple days. We'll see what comes for game six. But and he hasn't been right since the hamstring thing.
No.
He has like the pre-hammy, post-hammy splits. But I'm just saying, like when you look at the generation now or generation next in terms of the young star guards, you know, Ant in particular has zoomed by the Haliburtons of the world.
I mean, Tyrese Maxey is on that list.
Oh
too.
Boy. Maxey. I mean, Brunson's probably a little bit older than
those guys. Yeah, he played 4 years in college.
You know, Luka's been there, done that. Not that he's having, by his standards, a great series.
Luka's young, but he doesn't feel young, you know?
right, exactly.
Yeah, so the big thing to me will be here, did the Pacers screw around and let Giannis back in?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And if they did, because I don't think that I like the Pacers' chances of getting one win in the last two games if Giannis is either not playing or heavily limited.
Yeah.
But if they bleeped around and found out, they could really regret this game. And the thing about it is like really the difference in this series is game three, which I know the Pacers should have won a couple of times before they let Middleton throw in those shots. But, you know, they were up 3-1 because they were able to squeeze that one out
mm-hmm.
where Dame was basically done. He was busy. He was a decoy and Middleton was playing through whatever and throwing stuff in. But that was why they were up 3-1 in this series. And because they won that hard fought game on their home court, they were afforded this opportunity to end this series. And they let it slip through their hands with not a strong performance. And so they're young. They're still learning. This is a team that is doing all this for the first time. I'm not like saying it's catastrophic, but that injury report and that game, you know, that injury report that comes out, if it says questionable, Momo, that's going to churn your stomach a little bit.
McMahon, you were, I get the Anthony Edwards thing and I think he deserves all the flowers and all the respect and the cojones factor of the other night. But we cannot go one more minute without talking about Jamal Murray. If we're talking about young guards stepping out with the killer instinct, because
but he's had multiple playoff breakouts where Ant had one series last year where he was impressive, and then this year is just like, look out, this guy wants to take this league over right now.
And but I Jamal think we
Murray, talked, holy
moly. Oh my God. Like him, I saw him in the game in LA and the one the Lakers got, right? Game four. And I could tell kind of by the end of that game, he was limping around a little. And I remember asking the Nuggets about it. Is he all right? What's going on? Is he cramping up? And they go, I think he's a little dinged up. I think he'd be fine. And then you get the report the next day that he was questionable with a calf injury and all the detail we got on that after the game from Michael Malone, where it sounded like Michael Malone had this tearful plea to him not to play. Mm-hmm. And Jamal said, I can't let my guys go out there by themselves. And so he plays on this gimpy calf here, which is scary, right?
Was it a soleus or whatever? I mean,
I don't know if it was a soleus or a gastro, but we're just going to call the calf because there's a bunch of muscles in there. But the fact that he went out and did what he did. And at the end, there are two games in that series, which it's not a competitive sweep. It was a competitive gentleman sweep this year. A little improvement for the Lakers, but for Jamal Murray,
put a bow tie on the bronze broom this year.
Got to return the suit though.
A little rhinestone encrusted handle on the broom.
I mean, Jamal, like of all the young guards who have the playoff bona fides, I think Jamal Murray's right up there. I think Jamal's got enough of a track record now of making big shots like that in closeout games. That he's got to be almost at the top of the ladder.
He's the most accomplished, never been an all-star player, maybe ever. I mean, it's incredible.
Maybe ever.
So there was this moment that was captured in the hallway on the way to the Nuggets locker room as they were, you know, finishing up the series. And Jokic just came and put his arm around Murray. And, you know, it was Jokic and Murray headed into the locker room, vanquishing another opponent. And look, they got much bigger fish to fry and whatever. But like, it was just like a moment like, hey man, you did it. We're in this together. You did it again. Yes, absolutely.
Also, can we talk about Jamal Murray with the LeBron flex when he dunked on him?
Dude, how about like, forget the game winners, plural, in the series. His calf was hurt, but he went up and banged it on LeBron's head. And like LeBron was stuck under the basket and jumped late, whatever. Still, Jamal Murray went up and punched that thing.
He went at the king and dunked on his head and then gave him the flex. That's LeBron's pose, Brian. You've seen that, right? Like, that's LeBron's move.
Not miss.
Like, look, LeBron played 44 minutes or 43 something minutes. That play and obviously the rebound where Aaron Gordon just takes it from him. Like, this is where you see that he's 39. He did so many things in that game.
So many things.
But he is 39, you know? And like, and look, a lot of the league, you know, LeBron is now 15-2 in first round series in his career. And I've talked about this. A lot of times teams walked away 4-1, you know, or 4-0, having been like, damn, we gave it our best and he's just better. Like, trust me, Joakim Noah walked off the court many times, spitting fire, frustrated that he gave his all, and LeBron and whether it was the Cavs or the Knicks or the Heat were just better. And he just had to take it. And that's LeBron the other side. And LeBron stomped off the floor. By the way, nobody mentioned the fact, I remember a couple of years ago or a decade ago when LeBron didn't shake hands at the end of a playoff series. It was like 2 days long on ESPN. Nobody mentioned it at all. I mean, LeBron was pretty frustrated and tired of the Nuggets and tired of them yapping and angry that he lost it to him again. And that's just the passage of time, because he set other people right off the court like that many, many, many times.
And the other thing too, I know you want to say is he's 39 and Jamal dunked on him and Aaron got the rebound. The Nuggets have a lot more better players than LeBron and the Lakers had.
I mean, it's KCP's more players. A championship caliber player. Seriously. And if the Lakers could get a guy like KCP, I wonder if there's ever a way.
You know what it would be? It would be like mana from heaven. You like that callback?
Beautiful. All right. Well, on that note, we're going to talk about the Lakers before we go.
Yeah.
Hang on with us at the Hoop Collective. We'll be right back.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Okay, so look, I know that it's Laker talk dominated, but it is on ESPN all over the media. But it's a very interesting topic right now to see the way that series ended. I got obliterated by Nuggets fans last year when I talked about how competitive that series was. It was a sweep. So I'm not going to go down that path this time. The Nuggets got their 4-1 win, clearly established themselves the better team. But obviously, two games come down to the final 5 seconds. The Lakers don't get it done. Ramona, I actually believe this team wasn't as good defensively, but I think this team is every bit as good or maybe even slightly better than they were last year because of how good AD has been. And the season is kind of being deemed like a failure. Yeah. I just don't think it was a failure. They went out in the first round because they played Denver in the first round.
If they played Denver in the first round because they were a play-in team.
Well, they were playing team last year, and they got a different draw. Last year, they got a fortunate draw. This year, they didn't.
But they were going to beat Minnesota?
Well, no, but...
Wait, they're going to beat the Thunder.
I don't think they would have.
Okay, so they were a play-in team. Well, they were a play-in team that got bounced in the first round. That's what
But they could have played a team where, you know, they could have played a team where their star player got hurt. We've had several star players get hurt. Like, they could have had a fortune shot, but forget about the details. The point is, this is being deemed like a failure, and they may run Darvin Ham out of here. By the time this airs on ESPN2, Darvin might even be fired by then, and it's deemed like a failure. And I'm not sure that it was a failed season, but that's the way it is. And Momo, I don't know how you feel about it, but like, I thought the Lakers, they didn't overachieve, but I don't think they underachieved. I think they achieved. And I know that, you know, in this world, is this the last chance for LeBron to win a title? You know, is the era over with Steph, LeBron, and KD? I was like, okay, I guess the era is over. Sorry, they went to like 20 finals between them. LeBron and Steph went to a finals 11 out of 12 years. I'm sorry, it's over. You know, I'm so sorry. But like, Lakers fans are like all upset. I think they should be like, all right, we did okay. You know, does that make me a bad person for saying that?
I think they are the seventh seed. I think they were probably could they have been the 4 or 5? Sure. They would have won a few more games after the in-season tournament. If some of their younger guys had done anything for them this year while Rui was hurt, and they had a lot of games where they had to play some of their young players, like Hood Shafino.
If they would have made a decent pick at the 17th with the 17th selection, like
you mean like Jaime Jaquez
immediately afterward? Sure.
Yeah, those guys did pretty good.
But if they had Brandon Pajemski, it wasn't like they would have beaten the Nuggets. Just to be clear.
Listen, I watched all four games of this pretty closely, and every single game the Lakers had a lead. I mean, we had that incredible graphic that was aired during game four of like of the whole series, the Lakers led for like three quarters of it. Like literally the time of leading in the whole series, the Lakers led for about three quarters of it. And every single time Denver in the second half would come back and Darvin Ham gets criticized. Oh, he didn't make adjustments and the Nuggets hit. No, the Nuggets were just better. They just settled in. They started making shots. They had the confidence because they just do it every time. That's sort of their MO, as they play okay in the first half. And they know that, especially when they're in Denver at altitude, that teams are going to hit a wall in the third and fourth quarter. They're going to get exhausted. That's what happens every single time. The Nuggets come alive.
It's been happening for decades.
This is the home court advantage, the Rocky Mountain High, whatever you want to call it. Okay. This is what happens when you go to Denver. Teams generally play better once they've been there a few days, when they've acclimatized. But the Lakers were just not as good because the Nuggets, and I like the Rui Hachimura quote. Okay. I don't know if anybody saw that, if they just listened to LeBron and AD, but Rui's like, we've been together for a little while. They've been together for like 5 years. Like these guys, like the Nuggets are a team that is mostly homegrown. Yeah, they've added a few pieces here and there. They went and traded for Aaron Gordon and they signed.
But that was years ago. Now, I mean, Gordon's got his 10,000 hours.
They've been together. This is what happens when you build a team. When you have two homegrown superstars and then three, really, if you count Michael Porter Jr., who's been great this year, and especially in that series. And then you draft really well. I mean, Peyton Watson in this series. Oh my goodness, that guy's going to be on all defensive teams for the rest of his career. Like when you have a core three like that you've drafted, then you go trade for Aaron Gordon, who's a perfect fit next to those guys. and then you fill in and you reload that bench the way that they have, that's just a better team. That is team building 101. And the Lakers every single year start with two, AD and LeBron. And then they sort of shuffle everybody else around every year. And there was a little consistency from last year. I think the idea was to bring back Austin Reeves and D'Lo and Rui and that group that went to the Western Conference Finals. But as you mentioned, Brian, like, they got a favorable draw last year. They were not as good as the Nuggets. They ran out of gas. I think just getting to the playoffs was really hard for them last year with all the hole they had to dig out of. This year felt like they kind of peaked too soon. And then they had especially with the in-season tournament, the same way the Pacers did. They ran, they played really hard in December and they had this really bad January. They had a lot of, nobody wants to talk about the injuries to the role players, but there was a lot of injuries to role players this year.
You had any injuries? Give me a break.
No, I think they had the six most injuries of anybody, but it doesn't matter. The Nuggets are just better. They just are. It's a great championship team, and the Lakers drew them. And we can go back to the, should they have ducked them? Should they have tried to lose and then play the Thunder in the first round?
Well, they didn't have to try. They're going to until Zion got hurt.
Yeah, I mean, and who knows if they beat Sacramento, because they couldn't beat them all year. But I just think this Laker team, they're a pretty good team, but they're not as, they have not played together as much as the teams at the top of the West. The top three teams, Minnesota, Oklahoma City, Denver, those are teams that have grown together over the years. They know how each other plays. And Jokic gave almost a sermon. I mean, it wasn't long, but it was a sermon about, well, first you need to play together for 2 or 3 years. You see how each other plays, you know, when a guy's going to go right and when he's going to go left. And then you have to sort of go through some battles together and then you become a team. This Laker group hasn't done that. It's a new team every year.
This Lakers group, they'll be ready to contend for championships when LeBron can tap into his 401k. I mean, how much time do they freaking need? Give me a break. They peaked right on time. The Lakers peaked at the perfect time. They peaked when they had a chance to hang a banner. The mayor got his in-season tournament tweet off. Everything's good. They hung a banner, baby.
Okay.
We can go back to the in-season tournament
and whether or not the Lakers wanted to hang that banner or whether they were just good corporate citizens and went along with that for the sake of the NBA and Adam Silver and all that stuff.
It's a cute banner. They, like
I
said,
I think if you left it up to them, it would not be hanging there. Let's put it that way.
It is interesting how you talk about continuity. David Griffin, the GM of the Pelicans or president or whatever his title is, he came out today and was talking about how they really valued continuity.
Yeah.
And like made that their number one priority. And now they may have to step away from that and look at retrofitting the team around their star players. Like he stopped short of like saying we're going to turn over half the roster, but he basically said let's not have continuity. So
rough translation. Hey, who's interested in Brandon Ingram? Give me a call.
Yeah.
Well, I'll say this. I went to New Orleans.
That'd be,
you know, and this is not to take a stance on whether they should or shouldn't get away from Darvin Ham as their coach or anything. I think he's a really good coach. I think clearly he's lost AD and LeBron. I mean, just their antics on the sidelines, the post-game comments, I thought were unbecoming both of them.
Ramona, the problem is in this series, they were ahead for 5 games at half.
Yeah.
One game they ended where they blew a lead and they had timeouts sitting on the board unused. Another game they could have used a timeout and they did. And there's circumstances around all of that. Like I can explain some of that away, but that sits on the resume and it hurts. It hurts.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Let's say this, the last
game ended with maybe the smartest player of all time screwing up a 2-for-1 situation. And Jamal Murray hits the game winner with 3.6 seconds left and he didn't have a timeout.
Yeah.
So.
Oh, and that timeout was gone because they used the challenge this time. It was last time they didn't use it, LeBron threw a temper tantrum. Exactly. Then they use it and they were right, but you lose the timeout. That's why a lot of coaches don't like to use the challenge. But let me just go. Okay. This is a big picture, 10,000 foot Lakers comment. Okay. Since Phil Jackson retired, you want to name the Laker coaches?
Byron Scott, Luke Walton, Frank Vogel. Did I skip?
Mike D'Antoni, Brown.
I forgot about Mike D'Antoni and Mike Brown.
Okay.
Sorry.
And then we got Darvin here, Frank Vogel. I mean,
it's a tough game.
Every couple of years. I mean, and it's not just Phil Jackson, it's a tough follow. The Lakers have 17 titles. Okay. 14 of those 17 titles were won by three men. You know, this is a good little trivia here. I can tell you.
Well, Phil Jackson, I think, won a couple.
Yeah, he got 5.
Pat Riley won a few.
Yeah,
he got 4. This one's going to be hard. You got to go back to Minneapolis.
Well, I don't know who, you know. Bob Pettit.
Jack McMahon.
John Kunla. Kunla with a K.
Jack McMahon, I forgot. I should know where he
The other ones are Westhead, Vogel, and I think Bill Sharman got one. But the point is, when you win championships, when you're going to be this dynastic type of team, generally speaking, it's because you've had the same group together and you've had the same coach together and you have a system and an identity. And one of the things I remember, even when Jim Buss and Mitch Kupchak were running the team, Jeannie Buss didn't like that they fired the coach every 18 months because you're bringing in players to fit the coach's system, right? So if you just keep firing the coach, then you have players that are stuck there from the previous system and nothing fits together. That's kind of what's been happening in Lakerland. Like, LeBron and AD are the two cores, and they've just been searching ever since. Except back in 2020, they actually had the right formula.
I know.
And then they got cute. They got cute, and they weren't satisfied with that.
Well, I don't think it was cute. They got reckless.
Yes. And they traded championship caliber role players to try to go the superstar route and ended up just screwing up the whole
formula. Well, it was because they had a bad 2021. You know, yep. and they missed the playoffs and or no, they got swept in the
first. They got swept in the swept. They lost. That was the Phoenix year.
Yeah.
That and was the 2021 is where they go to Phoenix. AD gets hurt. I think they were beating Phoenix and then Anthony Davis got hurt and Phoenix came back and won that series and goes to the finals. But it was a weird series because that whole year was they mostly brought people back that 2021. They just added Marc Gasol. Remember, they let Dwight Howard go. They added Marc Gasol. They kind of changed a few things up to get even better. That was when they added Dennis Schroeder to the team. Traded Danny Green for Schroeder. They just tried to get better from a team that already won a championship. The thinking was all right. The idea, like, don't rest on your laurels and improve where you can improve. But
that's a loaded phrase these days.
Right. But I think it's look at that backcourt. How did they win? Brian, you were talking about 3-1-1.
Yeah.
How did the Lakers win? Alex Caruso and KCP were the starting backcourt.
And those guys were 6'7", you know,
yeah.
6'6", 6'7".
NBA defensive team caliber defense. Look, like KCP's probably not going to win an all defensive team. As you mentioned a couple weeks ago, he should.
I put him on my ballot this year because when I talked to coaches, they mentioned him, but I think I'm in the minority. I tell you what though,
who's fired up to watch KCP guard Ant next series?
Well, also KCP and Ant both sprained their ankles, so they need a couple of days off. Let me just say Austin Reeves played reasonable defense on Jamal Murray. He just isn't tall enough.
Yeah. Or big enough.
Darvin got raked over the coals by Laker fans all year because he played Cam Reddish a lot. And then he played Torian Prince a lot. And he didn't play Rui. He was trying to find guys who could defend.
Yeah.
He was trying to find guys on the perimeter. You know, he's playing whack-a-mole out there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Trying to put guys
out there. And Rui was hurt for part of that too.
Yes.
I mean, it took a while for him to come back. And I understand all that. They were just the in and out. Vanderbilt was hurt for 50 games this year. 53 games, I think he missed. But to me, you're right. He was playing whack-a-mole. It was a sort of trade defense for offense. Cause if we're not stopping anybody, and we're not scoring that much anyway, we might as well play some great defense. And they didn't really play that great a defense for those guys either.
Yeah. So one thing before we go, Ramona. So one of the biggest stories of the entire season that came out was when you and Woj reported about the Warriors having a discussion with the Lakers about LeBron. That was obviously fantastical and just, you know, almost.
I still can't believe that was real. Honestly, I know how real it was and I still can't believe it.
So let me just say, LeBron obviously teases the world with his comment and his walk off. By this time, everybody has watched LeBron for 1,000 hours giving interviews. Yeah. When he gets the question, he sees an opportunity. You can see the twinkle in his eye when he figures out what he's going to do, which is that he's going to not give an answer, and then he's going to drop the mic and walk off. He figures it all out in 1.2 seconds. So I wouldn't say he was happy because the Lakers had just gotten eliminated, but he was like, I see an opportunity here.
Yeah.
And I detailed all day long on TV today why LeBron opting out doesn't mean he's leaving, but has some ancillary benefits, both with how he can structure a new contract and to squeeze the Lakers a little bit, especially after they didn't do anything at the trade deadline. But I just want to ask you, and I also want to underline, LeBron is not walking away from $50 million. If your dream scenario, if your plot about where you're going to put LeBron involves him taking a $40 million pay cut, you can, you can retire that. Don't keep that, that tweet in the holster. Okay. But I just want to ask you, because you wrote this story and I didn't know about it at all. I didn't know you guys were working on it. And I was genuinely stunned when I saw it.
Did you think we got hacked?
No, because
it was one of those. Yeah.
I don't remember, but I was like, wow, obviously, and you talked about this at the time, the Warriors don't make the call unless they think that there's a reason to make the call. That's so right. Let me just ask you where you're at with what LeBron said and what his options are this summer.
I think that you are going to have a very fun time with Team USA this summer because it lines up perfectly for all the theater that LeBron knows exactly how to play on that stage. So it's going to be, there's going to be a training camp. There's going to be him and Steph on the court together. Steve Kerr is the coach. They're going to have arms around each other. They'll probably win the gold.
Maybe. They've got a great chance to win the gold, but it's not foregone conclusion.
You're okay, right. So. You're right. But the point is, he can make the Lakers wait. He doesn't have to do it. He can, if he opts out, he doesn't have to do anything. The Warriors, like, he can sign a new contract with them in August. Like, they can...
I don't want to. Okay. Let me stop you right there. I know. Let me clear my throat because this is going to get aggregated.
Yeah.
Okay. Look out.
Here we go.
I'm not saying he's going to do this.
Yeah.
Okay. But I don't think it's impossible that LeBron would go to Team USA and not have a contract.
I agree.
I don't think that's the plan. I don't think that's the preference, but because typically when you go to Team USA, everybody gets their stuff in order. Their extension is in order or their contract is in order. The Olympics are in earlier this year than normally on the calendar. Many Olympics start in August. These Olympics start the third week of July. So that means July 6th, Team USA begins. My guess is most of those players will have their stuff settled. And also you don't want to potentially go in a situation where you can get hurt playing with Team USA.
Correct.
LeBron doesn't have any concern about that. So I just think it would not necessarily be smart to assume. Probably he'll have a decision by then and have it all signed. But what you just said there, I think is true. And I didn't want to interrupt you, but now I'll let you have it.
Yeah. I would say if you're LeBron James, the reason to opt out, there's two reasons. One, you can get a new contract, maybe 3 years even for a whole lot of money. But two, it's also for leverage. So the Lakers can take... most things get sorted out early these days. Most trades happen either around the draft or in the first few days of free agency. I think this is tied to whatever the Warriors decide to do. He's probably not their top target in this summer. They have other trade targets, and bigger names. They want to settle the Klay Thompson situation. But everyone, when we were reporting that first story, everyone thought this could come back up. It's harder to get done now because of the contracts, because Klay Thompson is now off the books. It would have to be some sort of, whether Klay's in the deal or it's whatever they decide to do with Chris Paul's contract, the non-guarantee.
Yeah, there's bird rights issues.
Yeah, there's bird. It's just harder. But there's other constructions of that deal that would work that don't involve either of those two players, whether it's Andrew Wiggins or some kind of something with Moody, some of their draft picks. There's other constructions of the deal that don't even involve the two most likely big contracts that would have to be included to match. And so I think the best way to put it is, if there is a will, there is a way. And the Lakers want LeBron back. This is a team constructed around LeBron. I think there was a lot of fence mending that happened after the story came out and those discussions were had. Brian,
it actually might have been almost sort of like burning the ground or whatever. Like, I think it forced it's kind of forced them together a little bit.
Yeah. And look, let's go back. And this is just a visual and it's a couple of minutes during a game, but the scene of LeBron sitting with Jeannie Buss and Linda Rambis during, I think it was the Bucks game. It was a home game. He was not able to play. And they were, I think there was arms around each other. Jeannie Buss laid her head on his shoulder. I mean, there was very public. And it was very affectionate between the three people who are the mostly call the shots with the Lakers. And I guess Rob Pelinka was up in the stands or something. So that's the other one. But right, those.
It would have been nice if Rob put his head on LeBron's shoulder.
That would be.
Genie on one side and Rob on the other.
That'd be a little weird. I don't know. Maybe I could see a shoulder rub, but that would be, you know, as far as he should go. But that scene, even though it's just a player sitting with the owner, okay? It was nothing LeBron does is by accident, as you know, Brian. He's strategic. He's very aware of like last year when Kyrie Irving comes to the playoff game and he daps him up and he gives him a hug and all of that is him knowing, having been in the spotlight for 20 years, how big that is going to be perceived, that everyone on social media is going to go crazy with that. People are going to see it. I thought that was a big fence mending between LeBron James and Jeannie Buss. That and we can talk much deeper about why those fences needed to be mended. But clearly after the trade deadline and not just and after the hourglass tweet and after some of the passive aggressive stuff, fences needed to be mended on both sides. And so whether that was enough, whether it was just for optics, whatever, I think LeBron knows exactly what he's doing at all times. And like, you know, he's the guy who at the worst of the chaos after Magic Johnson went on First Take and took down Rob Pelinka or tried to and whatever, LeBron showed up to Frank Vogel's press conference. Remember that? He showed up and stood in the back. You know, they didn't hire his guy, Tyronn Lue, but he very publicly came to the press conference. I think he was wearing literally a neon hat. Like, hi, I'm here. Look at me. I'm wearing a neon hat in the back. And that is LeBron's really classic. Smart with that kind of stuff. Like, he knows people are going to notice that he is there showing support. So I think fences have been mended. If that were to come back up, I think it would probably have to come from LeBron. He would have to be his pushing.
Well,
the
Lakers
are not going to be
potentially be a free agent
out again.
Yeah, that's true. All right. Well, we'll see on that. I think he also knew exactly what he was doing when he made those comments. So, all right. Thank you so much, Momo, for all your insight. Thank you, Mr. McMahon.
No comments on my bobbleheads here? No, nothing. I work hard on these bobbleheads, Brian.
It's a very impressive display. Collection. Yeah, it's a very impressive display.
We got some old school Lakers ones that I had from a million years ago.
You've got a Boba Fett, or maybe that's a Jango Fett.
Yeah, Boba Fett. There. We got one of my husband. I think that's over there. Wait, no. There,
yeah, you got it.
There it is. Okay.
He looks very dapper.
It's like he never wears a suit. So I picked the one.
Shout out to Nevin.
We got a Devin George. This is like a fun
Oh my
game.
God.
Yeah, Devin George is up on the wall there. And then
bring back.
You can see kind of over my right shoulder, Lakers. there's Klay Thompson with a paper airplane. I got that one. That's a good one.
Oh, beautiful. That is a nice collection.
There's some Giannis. Everybody who sends me bobbleheads, I just put them up there. You know?
This is like me begging for free gear. She wants some bobbleheads. People say
I like
bobbleheads.
Yeah. All right. Listen, Kirk Gibson up at the top there. You see Kirk Gibson?
I don't believe what I just saw.
Okay, Jack Buck. Okay.
All right. Thank you, Mr. McMahon. Thank you to Bontemps for popping in earlier. Thank you to Jackson and Adi, our producers. Jackson, making the trip from Madison Square Garden back up to Connecticut tonight to do this. Thank you for watching and listening to us at Hoop Collective. We will talk to you soon.
Adios, amigos.